Husker Doc Talk Podcast 2016, presented by the Remington Trophy, number 13. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Nebraska now 6-0 on the season, up to number 8 in the Associated Press poll, number 9 in the coaches poll. I'm Travis Justice, good to be joined by former Husker All-American, the guy who's so excited Nebraska's unbeaten. The glory days are here again, Dr. Rob Zadiska.
How are you doing tonight?
Are the glory days here again?
Well, I mean, are you talking about winning 3 national titles in 4 years, glory days? Because that would be glory days, I guess.
You know,
or even when I was there, which was 4 conference titles and a national title. We considered ourselves almost kind of mediocre.
Dirk Chatelain from the Omaha World Herald must have been listening to the Doc Talk podcast.
I read that, and the first thought that went through my mind was, hey, Travis has been talking about this for, a freaking month now.
I have. How long have I said Nebraska 2016 is Iowa 2015?
I would say since about the third week in September.
And it really hit home yesterday when Desmond Howard and everybody on ESPN's College Game Day started laughing at Nebraska. And again, if I defended Iowa a year ago, which I did, I'm going to defend Nebraska to the hilt this year. You're unbeaten. You keep winning. That's all you can be asked to do.
It is. You know, it is, but I think the thing that people would like to see is if you're going to be undefeated against a schedule that arguably it's not the strongest schedule.
It's going to get tougher, though.
It's going to get a lot tougher. Well, they've got two really tough games, and after that, the perceived quality of the schedule drops off considerably. I mean, you've got Wisconsin and Ohio State, but outside of those two teams, it's Purdue. They're horrible. You and I were just talking about this. Daryl Hazel got fired.
Yeah, Daryl Hazel got fired today.
I did not hear about that until I walked in here and you and I started talking Purdue a little bit. Purdue's horrible. You know they're going to be. You know they're going to be a team that's completely in transition here this next week. Sometimes that actually makes them sort of a bit of a wounded animal mentality, and it's somebody you don't want to match up against. I.e., Illinois last year, for instance. But then Maryland's horrible.
They got blown out yesterday by Minnesota.
They did. Minnesota's—they're not a great team. They are very much not.
You know,
a
Mitch
great
Leidner
team.
Didn't even was not even the quarterback for them yesterday. Yeah. So
yeah, Minnesota's not a very good team. And then, like I said before, you got Maryland, Purdue, and Minnesota. Horrible, horrible lineup of teams to go watch here. I mean, they're just not good at all.
And then you end the season at Iowa, which Iowa's not playing very good. They looked better yesterday offensively.
Iowa's coming back and playing. They're kind of coming back and pulling in Iowa. They're finding ways to win.
Well, I would say this. Purdue ended up making it a lot closer yesterday against Iowa, against their second and third tamers.
You could tell they took the gas off the pedal mentally and emotionally. And they put in holy cow, there was a mental slip. I just dropped
you put Fry.
Hayden
you
Fry.
You called Kirk Ferentz.
Oh my
Hayden Fry.
Gosh, Kirk Ferentz. He pulled most of the starters on defense. He was putting a lot of backups in there in the second half, and Purdue was moving the ball against him.
Of course, we're going to talk a lot about the Big Ten and a lot about Nebraska's win over Indiana. But first, I'm going to tell you the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy is presented to the nation's top center. Named after former Husker great Dave Remington, the Remington Trophy banquet will take place January 14th, 2017 at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. This year's Ford Legends Award winner is Carl Mock. He played in the NFL for 13 seasons. Of course, he was an NFL coach around the NFL for 34. He's retired now, actually living in Lincoln. His daughter, a former Husker swimmer, also lives in Lincoln with her husband and kids. So still to be announced is the featured speaker. Are you excited about the Carl Mock pick?
I actually am, because he was coaching for the Arizona Cardinals when I was playing for the Giants.
Okay.
So we had to play them twice a year. And if you ever, I mean, he's a huge man. I mean, he is a
big dude.
Big dude. And he was one of these guys. He is a classic, old school, hardcore offensive line coach.
And he believes in a power running game. He does.
He does. And they, you know, Arizona, they had, I think they had Larry Centers at fullback. I mean, they had a very strong running game in that era when he was there. They had some very good offensive linemen. Aaron Graham played a bunch of years for Carl Mock down there for the Cardinals. But a great coach. He's one of those guys that you don't usually notice offensive line coaches stalking the sidelines. Carl Mock stalked the sidelines. And when you were on the opposite sideline, it was plenty obvious who he was and where he was at any given point in time. Talk about a guy whose voice could carry.
Good job, Dave, in picking Carl Mock, this year's Ford Legends Award winner. Now, the Remington Trophy presentation benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation, where Dave is the president. Cystic fibrosis is a chronic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system of about 30,000 children and adults in the United States, 70,000 worldwide. So for more on how you can help fight cystic fibrosis and help those who have it, visit Esiason.org. Coming up a little bit later on, the Remington Trophy Watch List Spotlight. We want to welcome Husker Hounds to the Husker Doc Talk podcast this season, now at three locations in Omaha. It is October. You're running out of time. They are selling cheerleading outfits for the little kids and football uniforms for Halloween contests. So get to one of the three Omaha area locations, including the new Husker Hounds at 149th and Maple, which is now open. And of course, if you need online orders, just go to HuskerHounds.com. And we want to thank HuskerMax.com for sharing the Husker Doc Talk podcast. For up-to-date Husker news, visit HuskerMax.com. This week's Beer of the Week. Rob and I are sitting here drinking beer, as we do each
Lincoln
and every week.
Beer.
We're going back to Zipline. You know, we've had a Zipline once this year, and that was the hibiscus. And that was early when it was still a lot warmer outside, and yeah, it was kind of refreshing. Now, it's getting a little bit later in fall. We're going to the German Kolsch.
It's a tasty beer.
It is.
I've liked a lot of their beers for a while. I think they kind of do a nice, consistent job. It's good beer. I really like the Zipline.
You hit a big word with Zipline: consistent. Every time I've had a Zipline, it's quality. You don't get a lot of variance either way.
It isn't, which you do sometimes see in a smaller brewery. Now, you can talk about microbrews a lot, but I mean, you look at some of them, say like Sierra Nevada, Lagunitas. These are ones that are pretty established and in fact have grown quite a bit over the last decade. And they are churning out, just barrels and barrels of beer on a yearly basis. Zipline, it's not the biggest place. I mean, they tend to just really distribute locally, and that's really about it. You find them in a lot of bars and restaurants, but given the size, I mean, when you're doing large batches consistently, it's easy to keep that consistent quality up. When you've got a smaller brewery like this, it's hard that everything comes out and it's always pretty darn consistently good.
Yeah.
And it's not like you see big variations. I mean, I can get this Kolsch next spring, and it'll be kind of the same quality that I'm drinking now.
Of course, the Huskers improved to 6-0, beating the Indiana Hoosiers yesterday. Great game. I watched every minute of it, enjoyed it. And what I liked about it, Rob, even though they made mistakes and some of the old Tommy Armstrong returned, they found a way to bounce back from that. You had a pick six, which was big, and then you had the interception at the end. So you had the running game that really, that last score was huge with the running game. You had defense make big plays. They just found a way to win.
They did. You know, a couple people asked me what I thought of this game, and my answer's been this was exactly what I thought would happen. I could see Nebraska kind of coming out, jumping out ahead. You could see Indiana kind of plugging away, settling down, continuing to play and playing well, and they did. Some of the mistakes you saw, not a lot defensively. I actually thought Nebraska's defense played better than I thought we would see. I shouldn't say that they played defense better, but they shut down Indiana better than I thought they would. They had an okay day passing. Indiana had by their standards, because I think they were one of the top three teams in the Big Ten in rushing yardage per game. And Nebraska held them to, I believe, just like a whisper over 88 yards rushing. I mean, they played really consistent on defense, and that's what kept Nebraska in the game. They had that one drive there late in the second half where they punched it down the field and I think four plays to score. Outside of that, the defense played very good football start to finish. offense, that's a whole nother story there. But it's
Go into it.
Well, I think it was things that I was worried about going in. One, you know, as big a deal as it's been made about Westerkamp and Seathan Carter, the thing that concerned me was, gosh, that offensive line's running on fumes. I mean, you've got a couple, and we've been talking about this. It's not like this is new or we didn't know about it. But you've got guys who are essentially third string, scheduled to be backups all year, former walk-ons, who are now the starters. And that offensive line is thin. It's, you know, it's guys that weren't slated to start, which tells you there were more talented, better ball players in front of them who got injured. And that's something that's really hurt. It's Tanner Farmer is a better ball player than what you saw out there. Gerald Foster is a better offensive lineman than what you see out there. David Neville is a better offensive lineman than what you see the guys take in his place. These are guys who they were scheduled to be backups because they weren't the best players. And that's who we're playing with right now. And the scary thing is we don't have a lot of depth after them. And so you get a couple more guys nicked up, which it's bound to happen. I mean, the season's only half over.
Yeah.
Yeah, the regular season's only half over. There's more guys bound to get nicked up here. Now, obviously, you'd like to see maybe Neville work his way back, Farmer work his way back. And so that's going to help. But it was blatantly obvious to me, Tommy Armstrong was under pressure all day. The running game was not clicking. It did kind of late. I think Terrell had, what was it? I think 50-some yards all in the fourth quarter. I mean, almost half his rushing total came in the fourth quarter alone. And that says something about, one, what Nebraska was trying to do, and two, what they were able to do. They were able to run the ball late in the game, and so things kind of were clicking a little bit. But for much of the game, the running offense wasn't there. Tommy Armstrong's limited in who he has to throw to. And so all of a sudden, all of that weight, I think, all of it comes back onto Tommy Armstrong's shoulders. You saw him getting chased out of the pocket. He's got kind of that patented where he spins away from the pressure, rolls out of the pocket, and either throws it away, takes off running, or in the case in the fourth quarter, makes a 72-yard touchdown pass. He had so much put on his shoulders in this game because of the fact that there were these injuries to the offensive line that limited the pass protection, and it really, I thought, damaged their ability to run the ball effectively. The other thing that happens, and you touched on this, is that when everything is put on Tommy's shoulders,
is probably the first time this year, right? I mean, that we saw it.
Yeah,
that this
I agree. It was. And that's when you see those old mistakes are going to slip back in. He's going to be in a position where he's got limited guys to throw to. He doesn't have somebody who's as precise a route runner as, say, Westerkamp is. Guy just has an uncanny ability to get open. The running game's not working. That's when you see any quarterback, even the best of quarterbacks, they kind of, to make something happen, they're kind of forced to force things. And that's when you see those interceptions. That's when you see those mistakes. And I think that's where a lot of that came from. When you saw those two picks that Nebraska had, where it was, you're sitting there going, oh my gosh, it's old Tommy now.
Even when he released the football, you almost knew that it was going to be picked.
Yeah, there was a little bit underthrown, and the fact that there were seven defenders right there. It wasn't seven, but there's two or three guys all in a position to make a play on the ball. But that's a situation where he's trying to force something to happen because he has no other options due to the injuries on the offensive line and due to the injuries at the wide receiver spots.
Okay, so you brought up two names, Seathan Carter, Jordan Westerkamp. You are a doctor. In your best medical opinion, do these two play the rest of the year?
I was talking with a couple of other docs I know about this, and this is a tough one because the injury I heard was a back injury with Westerkamp. I don't know how severe. I heard it's a bone in the spine. I don't know if there's like a chip, a fracture, a full-on crack. I don't know if it's...
But anytime you're messing with the spine, you got to be careful.
It is. Now, there's some spine injuries that sound like there's a broken bone back there and the world's on, and it's really not. But I heard anywhere from 4 to 8 weeks with him.
Okay.
Now, you go a week to the bye week, there's 1 week off.
Okay.
You got a week into this game, to the Indiana game, that's another week off. You got a week through Purdue. I mean, if you don't need him for Purdue,
don't play him.
There's another week off. Then it's another full week until game time up in Wisconsin. So there's 4 weeks of rest. Could that allow him to heal up and come back? It might. I don't know. I will say this. This is complete speculation on my part. I've caught little dribbles of information coming out of Lincoln, and it's like I said, I'm hearing 4 to 8 weeks, which 8 weeks would kind of kill the season.
Yeah.
4 weeks. I mean, we could see him at Wisconsin maybe. So,
but are you going to be in shape? Are you going to be ready to go after that?
Well, to my understanding, what I heard is that there's no neurologic compromise. Okay. Which means that he's able to exercise, work out, stay in shape. I would assume anything he could do that doesn't actually directly stress the spine or put an impact to the spine, I think he'd be able to do. Now, are you going to be in quote-unquote game shape? Well, no. But would you have, if you had a bad ankle sprain and you were
good
coming
point.
Back from an ankle sprain, yeah, you wouldn't be in game shape then either if you had to miss 3 or 4 weeks due to that. So if he can come back in 4 or 5 weeks, we could get him back for a significant period of the season. I got to be honest, I don't know. This is a total toss it for me.
Well, you're a doctor. I think you...
I'm an anesthesiologist. I'm not an orthopod and I'm not a spine guy.
Where do you work at?
Nebraska Orthopedic Hospital.
Okay, let's go to Seathan Carter.
I heard was an elbow dislocation.
Ow.
Which hurts, and that can be again, this is one of those things. I've seen guys go 4 to 6 weeks on those. I've seen 8 to 10. Trev Alberts had a horrendous one in the Oklahoma game his senior year, final regular season game. He came back had a big old brace on that arm, but he came back for the Orange Bowl game and sacked Charlie Ward 3 times with that huge brace on his arm. Now, Trev was a pretty special player in his ability to play with a not ideally healed elbow. Was him going out beating an All-American offensive tackle and sacking the Heisman winner 3 times. So guys are able to do it. But if you think about it, that was 6 weeks that Trev had basically from late November to about 5 weeks, from late November to the bowl game, first week in January. So almost 5 weeks. So I could see this being potentially for Seathan, however bad the elbow injury was. I truly, like I said, I don't know if it was a really bad sprain or a full dislocation. Neither one's good, but that's one of those where from the guys I've spoken with, I've heard 4 to 6 weeks on the short end, 8 to 10 on the long end. So that's one of those. Yeah, he could be back before the end of the season, too. We might not see him again this year, either.
Time now for this week's Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight, and we're going to focus on Lucas Crowley from North Carolina. He's a 6'3", 290-pound senior. Now, Crowley is a 3-year starter at the center position, and he was a third-team All-American pick a year ago, which really puts him in high contention for that Remington Trophy first-place finish because it goes off the All-American teams. This season, North Carolina off to a 5-2 start.
They're playing good.
They just upset
right now.
Miami.
And their offensive line, which center
had everybody back.
Center kind of spearheads that. They have been playing excellent, excellent football.
They average, 430 yards of total offense in a game and 130 on the ground. So I mean,
which for a school that doesn't bill itself as a major rushing school, I mean, they run kind of a pro style.
Yeah. Well, Fedora's
little
kind of
spread.
A little spread.
But it's not one of these teams that's lining up. They're not going to try and pound out 250
True.
Yards a game.
True.
They're just not. You know, one of the things that impressed me about Crowley is that the guy never redshirted.
I mean,
this was a guy came out of high school, actually started a couple of games as a true freshman at center. Played consistently. I think he played in about 6 or 7 games as a true freshman and started a couple of those games. Pretty heady stuff for a true freshman on the offensive line to begin with, but for a guy to do that at the center position, you got to be a pretty pretty bright player and a pretty mature, level-headed guy to be able to do that at that age.
So as we move on, Nebraska now getting ready for Purdue. It's going to be an interesting game because, A, Nebraska lost to Purdue last year. That's the one still hard to figure out. But Darryl Hazel just got fired. They got blown out by Iowa. They fire him midseason. So they have an assistant coach taking over the rest of the way. Mentally, what do you think that does to a team, especially when you got to go to one of the toughest places to play in the country?
I've seen it go one of two ways. I mean, I've seen sometimes it kind of – most of the time, it kind of throws things for a loop. And it depends on who they put into charge there to take his place. Do you remember when Ed Orgeron took over at USC?
And now at LSU.
Yeah, now LSU. Yeah, story of that guy's career. You know, he took USC to what, like a 4-2 finish?
Yeah.
I think something.
A lot
something
of people
like
thought he should have got the job.
Yeah, and he so sometimes it actually can help a team when something like this happens. And sometimes, you know, sometimes I think you get some assistant coaches who might have a better big picture about what a team ought to be doing. They're almost kind of closer to the players. They got a little bit better feel for what they're capable of. And, you know, maybe you just get a different viewpoint having an assistant come in and take over, and it actually helps things. Usually, though, especially in a situation like what Purdue's been in, I think it's going to take a team that wasn't playing very well. And I don't think it's going to change much. I think they're going to continue to not play well. I think they're going to probably lose maybe a little bit of mental direction from this. I just don't see it making that big of a difference because it's not like they were playing great football to begin.
Yeah, they beat Illinois. I think Illinois left everything on the field at Nebraska. I really do.
Yeah, I think they did. I agree.
But they beat Illinois.
Yeah, Illinois just got their second win of the season this past.
I mean, they
season,
gave up. So. If Nebraska, and this is why Iowa ran for what 365 on Purdue yesterday. What's Nebraska going to do on the ground?
If Nebraska is able to kind of do what they did in the fourth quarter against Indiana, I think they're going to gash them. And if Nebraska really commits to a running attack, I think they're going to gash them. You know, you talk about trying to figure out what happened last year at Purdue. I mean, I think mentally the team was in a tough spot. Tommy Armstrong was out for that game. That was a tough game for Nebraska. And the goofy thing is at the very end of the game, Nebraska was within a score of pulling it out. I mean, it was within reach at the end of the game. As bad as Nebraska looked, as horrendous as their defense looked. And I think that was one of those
games. They made a comeback, yeah.
They did. They made a comeback, and actually they kind of pulled within there right at the end. It just, as bad as they played, even that game was within two or three plays of Nebraska being able to pull it out. So, and Nebraska had everything going against them that week. Tommy's out. You had some other injuries. The defense was playing horrible. Guys just hadn't meshed with the coaching staff yet. I don't think guys had, quote-unquote, bought in, which I know is kind of probably an overused phrase. But I think there's a point where a team kind of looks at itself and says, hey, we're either going to go ahead and buy in and believe in everything we're being told by this guy, or we're not. And I don't think they had at that point in the season yet. I think they did as the season went along after that Purdue game, but that was probably the low point for him, I thought.
Jared Parker will be Purdue's head coach at Nebraska in the remainder of the season. He has no shot whatsoever of keeping that job on a full-time basis. Hazel is going to get about $12 million in a payout. No, he had a $12 million contract. He had two years left, so he'll get probably close to $2-3 million to walk away. He only had nine wins in his tenure, which is not very good.
I almost think you could show up and just tell your assistants to do everything and still get nine wins.
What do you think of midseason firings? You know, at one point I guess I was against him. Now I'm almost, if you know as soon as you know you're not going to retain him, get rid of him, because that way you can get a leg up on the coaching search, and as soon as the season's over, and then recruiting starts.
I agree. I think if you know it's going to be a done deal,
do it.
And everybody else knows. I mean, Darryl Hazel had to have known. I mean, it's not like he was sitting there going, well, maybe there's a chance they'll keep. No, yeah. He knew. They knew. It depends if there's anything salvageable to the season. Now, let's say this was a team that was potentially going to be able to salvage, say, a 7-win season and go to a bowl game that they might realistically have a chance of winning. And I don't think Purdue does.
No.
And
not at all.
No, but I'm saying if that was the case, if there was some, quote-unquote, something salvageable, then I think you keep him till the end of the season. You maybe even tell him, hey, listen, here's the deal. Here's what's going on. We're probably going to let you go at the end of the year. Coach through the remainder of the season. We're going to pay you out. We're going to do whatever your buyout is. There you go. And you still start on a coaching search. You keep it a little bit quieter. Everybody will still know you're going to fire him. He'll know he's getting fired. Be upfront about it. You just wait till the end of the season. But if it's a case like Purdue where there's nothing salvageable here, move on, start looking for the next guy. You let the recruits know, and you kind of do what Nebraska did, because yeah, you sort of had during that last bowl game against USC, you had two coaching staffs working together in the stadium.
Yeah.
And it was kind of weird, and they ended up all getting together a couple of times and doing like, hey, here's what we're doing on the recruiting front, and there you go. They ended up all kind of getting along. You know what? That's a best-case scenario, and that's probably a little bit of a rarity, but that was an – I mean, that's – as rough a transition as last year was in hindsight, from a mentality and emotional standpoint for Nebraska and that football team, I think it helped tremendously the fact that Riley was able to come in before the bowl game, kind of meet guys, chat with the previous coaching staff, and start making some inroads with the people already on the recruiting list.
So Purdue has Nebraska left. That's coming up. Has Penn State, Minnesota, Northwestern, Wisconsin, Indiana. They don't win one of those games. They don't. They don't win
it. That's tough. Indiana, if Indiana can kind of keep their heads up.
I like what Kevin Wilson's doing.
I do. I think Indiana could actually end up kind of be doing what they did last year, be a solid bowl game team. My worry is that Indiana's had a couple of really tough gut check losses.
Yeah.
That Ohio State, Nebraska. Those are tough ones to overcome. I mean, I don't want to say it breaks a team, but it's tough. If Indiana can keep their heads up, Purdue's got no shot against them.
Okay, before we move on, I know we're going to talk a lot about Purdue today because this is going to be, you know, Nebraska's playing Purdue next. A, Nebraska's backup's going to get a lot of, I mean, here's its time. A, you're
you
hurt
hope
anyway.
They do. You hope they do.
If they don't, there's something wrong. Yeah. I'm predicting a huge blowout here. A, you got revenge because nobody likes to lose to Purdue, and so you go get even, and then this would, you know, give the backups a lot of time to get in there. But Purdue has an opportunity here, and Les Miles' name was being floated around yesterday for the Purdue job. But if they really wanted to make a splash in the Big Ten, I'd go for Art Briles. I really would. Les Miles is not going to bring an offense that, now it may be a Big Ten offense, but it's not going to be innovative enough.
And he's a Big Ten guy.
Yeah, he's a Big Ten guy. But I don't know if Art Briles can recruit outside the state of Texas. He'd have to get all his guys to come up here. I don't know if that would happen.
Yeah, I could see him doing it. You know, the thing is, though,
is it a good job?
From a culture standpoint, would Briles want to do that? Hold on, he wants a job. I said that wrong. From a culture standpoint, does Purdue and the Big Ten Conference want Art Briles?
That's a good point. But Purdue's athletic director, which people laughed at him just 3 weeks ago, said Purdue is going to be about winning championships. It wants to compete for championships. And when you say stuff like that, what do? You take a chance.
You get a championship caliber coach. Yeah, and I think Art Briles is an awesome coach. I mean, he is a very good – he knows the game of football inside and out. He'd have a lot of recruiting connections. I mean, God, look at Drew Brees. He's a Texas kid.
Yeah.
Went to Purdue.
So I'm just saying there will be some big names and older guys that may not get the job. They can land in a Power 5 conference and get a job in a Power 5, but they're not – I mean, Les Miles isn't going to get one of those elite jobs anymore. Art Briles isn't going to get an elite job anymore.
Yeah, here's another. I mean,
unless he were to go back to Houston after Tom Herman takes Texas job.
There you go. Here's a question for you. I mean, is Baylor a great job?
Made it one.
I think he made it one.
Yeah. No, you're right. It wasn't beforehand. Absolutely not. He made it a great job.
I mean, it was when Grant Teff was there. Grant Teff was sort of the heart.
I don't know if it's
going to
be a great job again. They got a brand new stadium. Obviously, people there like to win, but you bring up a good point. Art Briles made it a great job. Now that he's gone, I don't know if it'd ever be a great job again. That's a very good point. And as Les Miles, if you're going to go to the Big Ten, when you could have had the Michigan job but 4 or 5 years ago, is going to Purdue just a constant reminder that you're third or fourth best on the totem pole. I mean, you have to take that into consideration. So,
well, and Les Miles has gone into situations like that and done well before. He went to Oklahoma State. Yeah. And when he left Oklahoma State to go to LSU, Oklahoma State was starting to play very, very good football.
I would agree with you. Agree with you 100%. So Nebraska's going to walk through Purdue this weekend. Did you get a chance to watch the Wisconsin-Ohio State game?
I watched little bits and pieces.
Damn, dude. That was a good game.
It was a great game. I don't know if I'm still ready to crown Ohio State and Wisconsin as wholly, completely unbeatable teams.
No, but I am with Alabama.
Yeah, they look pretty freaking good. That game I did watch.
Oh, my God.
It wasn't even close. I mean, from play one, it wasn't even
close. Now, I will say this. I've always thought all year long that Tennessee was the biggest poser in college football, especially in the top 10. I didn't think they belonged there. I was never a Tennessee fan. However, when you look at Wisconsin, when you look at Ohio State, two teams that Nebraska has coming up, beatable, but they're both on the road.
They are, and that's going to be really tough because Camp Randall is such a tough place to play. But, Wisconsin looked completely human against Georgia State.
Yeah.
Indiana, it was for a short period of time, I'll admit. Indiana had Ohio State on the ropes. They were a fourth down conversion, inside the 5-yard line going in from making it a one-score game and having all of the momentum against the Buckeyes. So it's not like teams haven't played well against these guys. It's not like teams haven't had Ohio State and Wisconsin's backs up against the wall. They have. So my bigger worry for Nebraska against Wisconsin and Ohio State is the fact that
you're not very deep right now.
We're going into these games with currently two of your original starters on offensive line. Three other guys hurt, out, banged up, or gone for the season. You've got two very good offensive weapons in Carter and Westerkamp potentially out. These are the things that worry me. Divine Azigbo's banged up. I worry looking at these injuries. If Nebraska was 100% healthy, I'd be sitting here going, okay, we are that legit trap game for both Wisconsin and Ohio State. We're that team that's going to come into your place, and if you don't take us seriously and if you don't play darn near mistake-free football, Nebraska's got a chance to beat both those teams. Now with these injuries, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
I think we do know this. The season is half over, but the best is yet to come. That's for sure. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. If you want to follow him on Twitter, you certainly can @DocTalkSports. If you are listening to us on Podbean, please give us a rating and follow us right here on Podbean. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, please feel free to give us a review, even a negative one, I guess, because some guy gave us a review last week, Rob, and said, Iowa guy talking Husky football, and he knows nothing about sports. So I said, that's fair.
You should really maybe have looked for a career in broadcasting to give you more experience.
You think so?
About this,
yeah.
Better knowledge base when it came to sports.
You know, the sad thing is I was doing my show yesterday, and I realized I've been doing radio now for 30 years. I've been on the air for 30 freaking years. You know what? I still love it. I still love it. I get excited every time the mic goes on. I love you, Rob. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. Please tell a friend about the Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll be back next week to wrap up the Purdue game and look forward to, well, what will be yet another exciting game for the Big Red. 6-0 on the season, number 8 in the AP, number 9 in the coaches' poll. It's all going as planned. Talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.